And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Welcome into One of These Years, our Detroit Lions podcast. I'm Chris Burke, joined by Nick Baumgartner, back from our week in
sideways rain.
Lovely Mobile. It was horrible weather, a nice.
Got
nice
to watch football.
Football. I spent a couple days in New Orleans by choice. You hung around
Pensacola Airport.
Day in Pensacola, not so much by
choice. I got familiar with the entire Pensacola Airport for the 14 hours or whatever it was. I was stuck there.
And you
Friday.
Flew through Atlanta on the way home?
Yeah, I wasn't in Atlanta for long, just a standard amount. But we were, I think, delayed for a couple minutes coming out of Atlanta. Made the time up in the air, of course. And then, you know, as you do, when you make the time up in the air, as all frequent flyers know, you just sit at the gate for longer because they're not ready for you when you land. So, yeah. It was the whole thing. I got the whole shot. It was the full day. Watched a couple of movies that I hadn't seen in a while, I guess. So, that was interesting. But otherwise, pretty long day.
I texted you after I made the drive. I drove from Mobile to New Orleans. And that was the day. It was just like
horrible rain,
monsoony. Yeah, there's a stretch there where you have to go like 10 miles over the water.
Yep, that lake in the
whatever it is.
I can't pronounce it.
And I was like, if I slide, this is it. That's it. I couldn't see except the car in front of me. There's no room to pull over. Like, I asked for his plowing through.
At one point, I was driving through. I told you, I think it was Gulf Shores or whatever that Shores area is Mobile and Pensacola. And the water, some of the bridges go up and some of the bridges are land bridges. And the water was lapping over the almost the waves were coming through. And I was like, oh, man. So I just hit the gas as hard as I could. I was like, I got to get the hell out of here and get to some higher ground or something because it was getting weird. We had some nasty weather, but... a lot of people got a lot of work done anyway, so it was good nonetheless. Yeah.
Well, we wanted to wait until after the Senior Bowl. I mean, part of it was that we wanted to wait until after the Senior Bowl to talk on the podcast here. The other part was that they wouldn't let us in the press box and kicked us out of the podcast section. So we ran out of room. We also didn't get to go to the Thursday practice live because the weather was so bad. They moved inside and limited the number of people there. I don't know that the weather was that much worse than it was Wednesday when we were standing out there getting soaked.
I feel like it was actually better, but
I understand that they wanted to give people as much exposure to the practices as possible. So we got to see 2 days live. We got to watch all three back on the All 22 videos from down there. And then obviously the game Saturday, the Lions coaching staff, the American team took the loss there, but I don't know. The game doesn't matter, I don't think, as much as the practices themselves, although a couple guys had some nice games Saturday. So we'll get into some of this. We want to talk about a couple of little Lions issues that came up. But just before we do any of that, I guess just general takeaways. Have you been to the Senior Bowl before?
No, actually, that was my first trip. Yep, that was my first Senior Bowl. Yeah, there. Yeah.
So impressions of the week, I guess.
I mean, I think that it's more beneficial. You know, I used to think of the Senior Bowl years ago, and it's got Jim Nagy, I think, has done a really good job of blowing this up and turning it into, you know, more people, I think, are aware about it and things than it used to be. And I always knew about the Senior Bowl, and I always knew the benefit that it gave players, at a greater level, really, than the Combine does. It's so much better for, you know, the thing you get from the Senior Bowl, I think, is so much more valuable than... for you as a player in the evaluation process to be able to work that close with scouts standing right there and things that actually matter. It's just so much better. It's just so much more valuable than the Combine in every way. It can be haphazard or whatever at times, but with weather and everything else and that many people coming into a small town like that. But the event is important. And I think that it's good that I think we as a kind of a draft Twitter community, whatever you want to call it, like, you know, the Shrine Bowl, I know, gets more love now than it used to. I know people talk about the Collegiate Bowl a little bit more now than they used to. I know that, you know, Jim Nagy and those guys put together the HBCU Combine this year with the Senior Bowl. The on-field evaluation stuff just means so much. And, like, I'm glad to see that getting the showcase, the bigger showcases as we go forward, as much as the, you know, measurables and everything else that people fixate on. Because this is really the stuff, Chris, as you know, that matters. It's the most important stuff. Can you scoop under a guy and block him? I don't give a shit how much you can bench. Can you do this, right? Like, that's
right.
That's really what we're seeing here at the Senior Bowl. And it's really cool to watch coaches tinker with and put guys in weird situations and mess with them. And just, like, you know, that's what they're doing, right? They're just trying to put them in weird spots and see how they react. And it was a cool thing. And the kids always seem to have a good time. So it was fun.
Well, you wrote about, too, the HBCU Combine actually had there's some guys there that are going to end up playing in the league. So that's cool that they spotlighted that event.
Absolutely.
Both the Lions and Jets staffs had a couple of HBCU coaches come up and join them on their staffs for the week. Tyrone Wheatley was with the Jets, right? I think so,
yeah.
So that's kind of cool, too. Like you said, it's interesting because I think people just – people who just sort of casually follow the Senior Bowl, I think, assume it's an NFL event.
And yeah,
it's sort of independent. And you compared it to like an actual bowl
game. Bowl,
I mean, Jim Nagy we drove past their headquarters on whatever downtown street that was in downtown Mobile. You know, they bring in all their sponsors. I think they do all the TV stuff. You know, it's through the NFL Network, but I think, you know, Jim Nagy.
Yeah, the NFL is a partner, right? Like a partner, but not. Yeah, Jim Nagy runs it.
Jim Nagy controls the schedules, and like there were, I think this year they started, there was like a package they were charging for extra access to players and things like that.
There you go, man.
it's sort of its own thing, and I think that's probably part of why it runs. Like, the Combine is the NFL's thing, and so it's, you got 15 minutes with each guy, and they got to be here at X time, and they got to be here, and so it's all a little more sterile, I guess, and set up than the Senior Bowl. So, it is a cool event. Certainly, you get to look at 40 prospects this year, and I think, to your point, Jim Nagy has gotten, you know, you have to be at least a fourth year junior, I guess, to be eligible for this, but they pull in some pretty big names now to this event. You know, it's not just like whoever's left over that happens to be a senior.
Right.
Getting some, there are some guys down there that are going first round.
Yeah.
And so that helps too with the evaluation process
of
everyone,
big time.
Good and bad. So
big time. Big credit to Jim. I mean, they've done a great job with the whole thing.
So, we'll get into that in a minute. I wanted to touch on, before we do, we have our, you know, sort of Lions-centric all Senior Bowl team up on theathletic.com. We'll talk about that. But a couple comments that came up while we were down there from Lions coaches that were at the event that I wanted to talk about here. And the first is from Aubrey Pleasant, who was the defensive coordinator down there. You know, good exposure for him and for Ben Johnson on the offensive side of things. Deuce Staley was the head coach. So the great experience. That's another tweak they made this year, bumping up guys from the internal staffs up to those positions. But Aubrey Pleasant made a comment. Someone asked him about Tracy Walker and what Tracy Walker's upside is. And he said something to the effect of, well, Tracy and I both agree that there's a lot more in there that he can do. And if we get to work together again, we hope to bring it out. And so I thought that, you know, we've talked a lot about Tracy Walker and his future here. And I thought that was interesting for a couple of reasons. One, he wasn't going to say, like, well, we're resigning him, obviously. But it sounded a little open-ended.
It did, yes.
What
yes,
Tracy Walker's
yes.
future is. But the other thing is, as we've been trying to put a price tag on Tracy Walker, it sounds like there's an understanding, maybe on both sides, that he is not yet an elite NFL safety. I don't know if I'm reading too much into what Aubrey Pleasant said there, but that's the takeaway I had.
My guess on that would be, because they have a good relationship, and I think that Tracy has, you know, said, you know, without saying, I'm not going to give these guys a discount, but man, I really like the coaches here, right? And that's part of the reason why I want to come back to Detroit. I think part of that could be like, look, Tracy, you know, I don't know what you're worth or what you're not worth. This is Pleasant talking to him and saying, like, you know, go do your thing, get your money. But if you come back here and we're going to go to work, I am not going to treat you like you're some, you know, like you're Ed Reed. Okay. Like, we're not going to come back here and suddenly be, you know, well, I'm above criticism because I got paid and all this. Like, no, we're going to do things exactly how we did them last year. And I think that that might be what he was talking about as much as anything. And I think that it was probably something that Walker maybe needs to hear as he goes into that. As we've gotten to see or be around Tracy Walker more, you know, like, you can see him grow as a person, and he's a competitive guy, I think, and all that sort of thing. But I could maybe even almost see him, you know, sort of telling Pleasant, like, I, you know, if we're still together, and I think maybe he would prefer that in some way, shape, or form, I need you to keep pushing me like, you know, like you did when you got here and I was kind of on the ground. Because I think that that might be the secret there. Like, he worked his butt off this year and he put himself in position to, we'll see how much he gets paid. Like, Chris, we have no idea what the market is, but like, I think everyone could probably agree that there's a lot more in there, and we really only just did see part of it. Because, like, see, somebody asked something about, like, you know, Tracy had a really good year, but he only got to one interception, I think, right? Or was it one or two or a couple? It wasn't that
one,
many.
One, yeah, just the one at the end.
And he, and Pleasant, yeah, and you could see Pleasant kind of, like, smiled a little bit and was like, well, you're not wrong, right? Like, I mean, you know, you're right. Not wrong. So, and he could have got to more. And I think that was kind of what the question was. Like, he got his hands on some, but he only really, he only finished one. So, like, that kind of stuff. And I think that those are the things that they seem to be, they seem to be at that level, player to coach, I think. And that's kind of cool. And, yeah, I'm hopeful just as an observer that we get to watch that sort of thing continue. But I have no idea, you know, how that's all going to go.
Yeah, and like you said, the market is a little tough to figure because the safety market fluctuates maybe as much as any other position.
Oh, yeah, in the it's league. Really hard.
Like, there's been a couple of years here where no one signs for mm-hmm. like a month or two.
And then yeah.
Last year, there was a little bit of a run because a couple of the guys got franchise tagged, including Marcus Williams, who's now probably will be a free agent. And you would assume if Aaron Glenn's still here, maybe even if he's not, is a guy that the Lions might be interested in. And so he was, the franchise tag was $10.6 million last year. Marcus Williams is probably a $10 million plus safety on this market, which puts Tracy Walker, you would think, a little below that, $7-8 million. But that's, now we're, if you're looking at both of them, now we're talking $18-19 million for two safeties. So I don't know if that's in their budget either. So, yeah, I don't know. It's going to be really interesting to see sort of where this goes with Tracy Walker. But like you said, I mean, and we've talked about it a lot, it's hard to have these in-house guys who have shown that they can play in this league and who want to be a part of this and have the right attitude and just say, well, we're not going to pay you. See you later.
Right.
You know, like, they, I don't know that they're in a position to do that right now. So.
No. So they might have to overpay him. I don't know. And I think that that's something where, like, when Brad Holmes said the whole thing about we're going to be as careful as we possibly can this year with the money, but also we have a little bit more this year. And so, you know, I don't know if that's what's the math like on that. Does he value what you're just saying there? Maybe you pay a guy that you love a little bit more, or does he not? Or does he say, I'm not doing that because we're not in that situation yet where we can where we can afford to do that reasonably. And that's a million. We have no idea. Right. These guys don't really like to answer those questions, and that's fine. You know, I can't blame them. So that's going to be Tracy Walker's whole contract thing. It's going to be very interesting to see where it all ends up. I think all parties would agree that they'd love to have him stay in Detroit, but like, you can't also, he's got to get paid, and they can't, it can't be ridiculous on their end either. So it's got to be mutually beneficial. And I think both sides understand that too.
Yeah. And I still think he's back for what it's worth. That's
probably
just
I'd guess on that. Yeah. I think they're going to go into it with good, you know, both sides in a good place, it seems like, right? Which I wouldn't have said that a year ago, certainly, my God. So, yeah.
And I think it's, I mean, we also know that the cap's going to go up, and there are ways around, like, if you want to bring Tracy Walker back for 2 years and just see where you're at, you can give him a 4 or 5 year contract. And
yeah, and well, now, and here's the other thing, because you mentioned it. Like, so if Aaron Glenn gets the Saints job and takes Aubrey Pleasant, that changes everything. Because if Tracy Walker's looking at coming back here for somebody else, well, now I don't know. And I think that that's, you know, I think his infatuation with being here is more about the coaching staff, or as much about the coaching staff as anything else. I, you know, not to say he doesn't like living here. I think he does. But, like, it's as much about his relationship with the staff, I feel like. The staff, as in Aaron Glenn and Aubrey Pleasant. as it is anything else. So if those guys aren't here, then I would say, well, now I don't know. You know, and that's a different conversation.
Yeah, and so we should, I mean, we should know pretty soon here.
I would think so,
that
yeah.
Saints job, I would think. And the other one that came up that I wanted to touch on, we were talking with Antoine Randall-El, I believe. That's who it was, on Thursday. And, you know, someone asked him about the receiver position as a whole and sort of what this team needs to move forward. And he said, well, we need that X. We need the number one guy that just, even if teams are taking him away, we're still going to go to him when it counts and when it matters. And, you know, that got out there and people kind of, not everyone, but a few people freak out that, well, isn't Amon-Ra that guy? He's showed down the stretch, you know, whatever it was, it's the streak of, you know, 8 catches per game and 100-yard games all over the place. He looks like he could be a 100-catch, 1,000-yard player for the foreseeable future.
Right.
Can't he be your number one? The Rams are in the Super Bowl with Cooper Kupp as sort of a, you know, he's not your typical X. You know, he's not Calvin Johnson, Marvin Jones, who's going to win on the outside and just dominate guys physically. So can't Amon-Ra be that guy? And I don't know. What's your takeaway from what Antoine Randall-El said?
Well, it's two different conversations, and that's a good question, and it's a good conversation to have because I look at Amon-Ra St. Brown as almost like an offensive hybrid as much as anything else, a skill hybrid in that, you know, he is a player who can play, he's a Z, I would say, probably, in terms of, like, your standard, what's he play, right? What's his home base? We would say he's either a slot or a Z receiver, probably. I would say probably Z, because I think he's physical enough to go out there and do that, like a flanker, you know, type position, or whatever you'd call it, and whatever you want to, the guy opposite the X, right? The X in this conversation is your big anchor, 6'2", 6'3", big body guy like Pleasant's talking about that can, he's on the line of scrimmage, you know, he's hard to press because he's physical, he sets a lot of what you do in terms of formation and everything else, it's a lot of just like schematic in how you are designing your offense. He's a guy that physically is going to be able to make plays down the field and vertically, like Randall-El is saying, no matter what coverage is, whereas St. Brown is not going to be able to do that because of how his body is and everything else, as we know. But in a different way, you can look at a hybrid type skill and say, well, we can move him all over the place and he can play a little bit of Z. He can play in the slot. And you saw this year, they moved him in the backfield. You could really even do things in some personnel groups where you could put him as your X and it'd be fine. But they still do absolutely need a 6'2", big bodied type guy who can go out there and be an X receiver that can run vertical routes and not get knocked off, you know, knock it off his path. By a big body corner, because that's really what the Lions ran into until Josh Reynolds showed up, as we saw. So I think that Amon-Ra St. Brown could certainly, he could develop into their best player, but he wouldn't be what we would call a one or an X receiver in terms of the, you know, what you would just label him as. So, you know, I understand the freak out there, but I think that's an overreaction, I would say. And that's like similar to when Anthony Lynn last year said A and B back, right? Like when people lost their mind about that one. And as we all saw, DeAndre Swift is certainly the, you know, the guy that they value the most on this team. So that's really what I would say in that sense. I think it's more, you look at St. Brown almost like as an offensive hybrid in that you can do so many things with him. But it's the point to make in that they do need to draft a receiver with size, because there were times this year, as we talked about, like where they were having like Khalif Raymond go out there and try to be the X, and it was like, Jesus, like he cannot do this as hard as he plays, right? You know, he cannot do this. It's not fair to ask him to do that. And same with St. Brown in some capacities too. So I think it's, you got to sort of open your mind up a little bit in terms of how you think of these things, but I understood what he was saying. And I agree. They do need the X, but this is where the Brad Holmes Rams way of doing business is interesting with the receivers. Who's to say you can't pay Amon-Ra St. Brown more than your ex? I don't.
Sure.
Right. If he's the guy that you value more, no one else does that. Typically we think about, you know, well, you got to pay Kenny Golladay all that money. Why? Because he goes and catches a bunch of touchdowns. Well, what if he doesn't? Well, last year he didn't catch any. Right. So what else is he doing for you? So like, I think you could look at it a couple different ways. Right. And I think that's kind of how the Lions look at this right now.
Well, and that's, you know, Randall-El said Josh Reynolds didn't really get a chance to play that role for us really that much. But yeah. maybe he's got that in him. And he said maybe Cephas can do some of that because he's really good in the air and he's really physical and body control guy. And so I think you're right. I mean, I think that we're not, I don't think he's necessarily saying we need, you know, Mike Evans.
Yeah.
We just need someone to play that role. Maybe it is Josh Reynolds. It did open up a lot with Josh Reynolds just as someone Goff trusted to throw the ball downfield to.
A vertical safety valve,
right.
basically, yeah.
It just gives you something else in that offense. I mean, some of it's going to depend, too, on you just can't say Amon-Ra St. Brown is going to beat Cooper Kupp. Cooper Kupp is maybe the MVP of the league this year.
That's ridiculous to
say. And I think, you know, you're also talking about a guy who scored 16 touchdowns. The air yards per target for him was like 8.5 and St. Brown's was like 6.5. So I think that's the other thing. Is he going to develop to be more of a, is he going to stretch the field for you more vertically in the future? Or are they going to start using him or continue to use him more? The way they used him this year was less Cooper Kupp and more Debo. Like,
right. It was more Debo Samuel. Yeah.
Like screens and they got him in the backfield.
Now that I think you can maybe, yes, that's possible something, right? Like, I think we would agree with that. Maybe more him than Cooper Kupp, I would say.
Right. Yeah, anyway. And the 49ers, I don't know that they necessarily, like, who's their X? Like, quote-unquote X.
Well, they have one, but it's not a guy that they're, like, worried about, you know, paying a bunch of money to. I mean, but I'm sure, yeah, I'm sure they've got, I don't know who it would be, but I think they've had a rotation of guys over the years. Yeah, it's like whoever.
Kittle.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, more or less. And a lot of times, Kittle's their X or Juszczyk might be in some of their lineups. Yeah, but, right. like... But yeah, I mean, it's not, and I think that, you know, you saw Anthony Lynn come in here this year and, you know, their ex was going to be Tyrell Williams, but that didn't mean that Tyrell, I still think if Williams had played the whole year, I still think St. Brown would have ended with more catches and it would have been exactly the same, but Williams was going to be their guy who can stretch over the top and a guy that you're going to have to worry about and you're going to have to cover him if he runs a vertical. Like that's, the Lions were in situations this year where they didn't even have a guy that you'd have to even bother covering if he was running, you know, take the top off type route. So that's really, I think, what you're looking for, if nothing else.
I guess Ayuk is probably their ex, I guess.
Yeah, and he's a nice player, so we're probably underplaying him some, but yeah.
Yeah, but to the point being, like, you don't necessarily need to have, like, a top five receiver in the league playing your ex.
No, you don't.
You just need someone there, and I think that's kind of what Antron Randall L. was getting at, and so we'll see kind of where it moves forward. But that also lines up with what we've talked about you know, all along with this draft and especially with this draft, but with free agency, you know, that's what you got to be looking at. If you're talking about a receiver in the first couple rounds here, I mean, that would be what you're taking, right? Like someone who can get downfield and do that for you. So,
yeah, yeah, exactly. That's the type of guy I think that you're targeting right now. If you're the Lions and nothing else, you're targeting a bigger bodied receiver who typically are the harder ones to draft, the guys that are whatever. But, I mean, that's kind of what you want. So you at least have a type maybe in mind. And I think that that's maybe a good thing, that you're not necessarily, you know, well, we need everything. So at least you know you have a guy that you can count on and he's going to be here in St. Brown. And you can sort of work around him and build around him. So they're in a much better spot than they were, but, you know, still going to be competing, I think, on draft boards for guys that are at a pretty high premium spot. Like, I mean, we saw one there in Mobile, you know, Watson there, who was just, my God, I mean, like everybody would want him, right? So easier said than done, and you got to kind of be careful with some of that stuff too.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the point just being that, like, saying we need an X doesn't mean,
right,
or we don't think St. Brown can develop beyond what he did
this
year.
Yeah, I think of course
if you're talking about building this offense the way you want to build it, you know, you can't have Khalif Raymond playing X receiver. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And that's sort of where they were this year just because of injuries and how they built the roster. So, but yeah, you mentioned Watson. So let's shift here and get into our all Senior Bowl team, which, you know, Dane Brugler had one, which was sort of, I guess, more bigger picture. Ours kind of focused on how these guys fit with the Lions. We went position by position. Again, it's up at theathletic.com. If you don't have a subscription, head over there. You can pick that one up and you can get our show ad free on the site. I guess we can just go top down. You broke down the offense. I broke down the defense. Malik Willis sure came out of that week with a lot of buzz.
Yeah.
I think we figured he probably would, but seeing it live, it was, I think, as advertised.
Yeah, more than advertised, I almost feel like. His arm is real, of course. I think we saw that in warm-ups when we were standing there. I think everybody could see that. Just, like, the effortless, the ability to just flick the ball, and it just explodes off of his hand like that. You know, not every quarterback has that, and if you've been around guys that do have it and guys that don't have it, you know when it's not there, right? It's one of those type of things. And with Willis, it's absolutely there. It just explodes off of his hand with, like, no body movement at all. And when he does actually put everything he's got into it, holy shit, like, it's real. So the thing that we were looking for that we didn't know was how fast can he sort of go left to right and make reads. And, you know, that's what we actually talked to Mark Brunell about in the middle of the week, and he was even, like, impressed. And I think we kind of both talked, like, I don't think he was asked to do a lot of that in college, and a lot of that is just, like, there. It seems to be much further along and kind of raw and in there as just, like, a natural thing, which is great if that's the case. But it seems to be much further along than I think everybody maybe thought, or at least I thought. And not sure if he's a day one guy or whatever, but I think he'd be able to come in and maybe fight and compete reasonably more than I thought. But also, like, I am much more willing to take the ride on he would be ready in year two than I was before watching him in the Senior Bowl. I think he was very impressive to me. I'm curious for your thoughts on the same thing. We've talked about him on in a story we did last week, but, like, he just got better as the week went on, and the weather got worse. So he got better. Yeah. The weather got worse. That's a big deal to me.
Well, I mean, and that was the thing. You wanted to see, like, how is he going to improve and how is he going to settle in here? And I, you know, as Brunell said, like, these guys are coming here and, like, haven't really even called plays in the huddle before, and they're on the wireless headset for the first time. And so there's a lot of stuff there that.
Yeah. Like, Carson Strong, poor guy, was, like, acting like he was in the damn.
Yeah.
SEC, like an LSU game at night out there with the damn headset.
And so I think that was more like the physical tools, you know, are there for Willis. They're impressive live, certainly. And he got out of some plays in the backfield that he was probably the only quarterback there who was getting out of those plays.
Right.
And so that's there. But I thought that everything else was what I agree with you. Like, everything else was what impressed me. It didn't look like it was moving too fast for him. He was getting through his reads. He wasn't, like, even the times he got out of the pocket and scrambled, it wasn't
a
panic move. It was like, let me get to my third progression. Okay, it's not there. I got to get out of here. Yeah. It was all very measured. He seemed under control. And so I think it was a really good week for him. And to hear the Lions staff talk about how quickly he absorbed the playbook and understood everything they were showing him, I mean, that's what matters. And so, yeah, I mean, I don't know that he could have done a whole lot more. I mean, it's still there's still things that you're going to be worried about with him. And I think you saw that he forced some throws there. It doesn't seem like he even knows where the ball's going sometimes. Like, it's one's into the sidelines, the next one's at a receiver's feet. So that technique stuff that we talked about and have written about is still there, and you got to clean that up. But I think in terms of the mental process of it all, even down to his press conference, I mean, he was just like, he seemed like he was ready to be there.
So I think
you talk about his background too, like, that he played at Liberty. It's you know, a smaller school program, but he was a Auburn first, right? Like, this isn't like he came out of nowhere and we've never heard about him before.
Right.
Like, the talent's always been there for him.
Yeah.
And so it's just a matter of whether you could get him kind of up to speed on all the other things. And if he's going to get there, man, I don't know. I came out of that week wondering, like,
yes,
I still don't think you can take him at two.
No.
But I don't know that he's going to be there at 31 or 32 either.
Yeah, I think that if you want Malik Willis, you probably have to have a plan if you're the Lions. And I'm not sure that they wouldn't or don't. Because the more you look at a guy like this, the more you think, like, all the things that they could do from a run standpoint in their offense. And the run could set up the pass legitimately. And they could be a... You know, what Shanahan does is what Shanahan does. But, like, they could be something like that, I feel like, if they had a quarterback like this.
it could be something that is really, really cool and something that is unique and something that's difficult to defend. And I think that, you know, he's the type of guy that if you could grow together, right? Like you get him in as he's learning and you build the offense around him and he grows with you as you grow. And oh my God, like suddenly you look up. Like that's what I feel like when you watch a guy like this, because I think he's got all the traits you're looking for physically. He's tough. He's physically, we saw him run around a little bit in the Senior Bowl. You saw him break out of the pocket, make some crazy runs. And you can see where he can even get out a little bit and put the shoulder down and run people over if he has to. It doesn't have to be something where you can never feel nervous about, you know, you could run him five times in a game, I feel like, and not panic about it, right? Like, I feel like you could do stuff with him and it would be cool. And you could do normal, you know, passings. It would be, you could do a lot with a guy like this once he got his feet under him. And I think the Lions, the way they look at the game, the way the staff looks at the game, I think they understand that. So I'm very curious to see where this goes because you're right. I think you're going to need a plan if you want him. So it's going to come down to, do you love him or do you just like him a lot? And, you know, that's the tension there that they have to weigh as they look at next year's class. And then right here, right now, I mean, Kenny Pickett's QB1, right? I think we can probably agree with that. And then it's probably Malik Willis, right? I think that's
out of that Senior Bowl class, or are you bumping Coral down? Or you just don't like Matt?
I mean, what do you think? I think I like Malik Willis more than Coral, to be honest. At least as much. Yeah. I don't know if I would say that the difference for me is that great between those two.
What did you think about Pickett's week? Because you know, it was some of the, because we talked about the weather conditions were terrible on Wednesday. Tuesday was bad for pretty much every quarterback because it was the first day down there. So
yeah.
Is he a guy that built any momentum for himself? Is he still in the same spot? I mean, what's your read on how he came out of it?
I feel like he like solidified himself as QB1 probably. That's what my thought was, because you know, he was everything was easiest for him. On the day when everyone was struggling and everyone was swimming and clearly overwhelmed, he was the least overwhelmed by like 100, so by a ton. Willis, nothing bothers him, but he was still missing and stuff, but you could nothing even care. Nothing. I mean, it was like rolling off his back, like what, like it was nothing. Pickett wasn't making those mistakes. He was still rifling through his reads, like it was nothing. You could tell that he was an experienced guy. But you know, the thing I guess I can't figure out is like, I think he's a good quarterback. I do, and I think he can win games in the NFL in the right situation. But I also wonder, like, was he just like perfect for the type of situations a Senior Bowl puts a quarterback in? Because they just, ultimately at the end of the day, they just throw a bunch of stuff at you, try to overwhelm you, and then put you in 7-on-7 and see how fast you can make reads, or put you in 11-on-11 with a bad offensive line and see how fast you can make reads in a shoddy pocket, right? Like, that's right. What the Senior Bowl is for quarterbacks, pretty much. And so is Pickett just really good at that, and that's all we're going to see, or is that all you need? I don't know, and he's a good quarterback. Is he a generational talent? I don't know if we can go that far. Is he a guy that's going to be, you know, somebody that's going to be a franchise guy forever? I'm not sure. But I think he's a good player, and I think in this class, he seems like the safest bet. That's what it seems like to me right now.
And it is fair to mention that both offensive lines got the crap kicked out of them down
wasn't
there
good
for the most part. So, and especially, and Pickett was on the other roster, but especially the American team with the Lions offensive line handled by the front of that, of their defense. So that also complicated things. I think Pickett was solid. I think he was fine. I think he maybe has, and we saw it in some of the numbers with the spin rate and stuff. I think he has maybe a little more zip than I thought he did his throws. I wasn't blown away by, I didn't think he was far and away the best quarterback down there. I think Willis was the best quarterback down there. So, but I think he was fine. I mean, I think I thought Desmond Ridder bounced back pretty well. He played well in the game Saturday too, because Tuesday was terrible.
Yeah,
for him.
He was a nightmare the first day.
He looked very rattled on Tuesday and fumbled a few times, and I thought he came back well.
Yep, it was good to see.
You know, Sam Howell.
I thought he was okay. I thought he was solid.
I just don't see it.
But I don't either.
I'm still not seeing it with him, man. I just think it's too.
I actually was more. I was impressed by him, and I still don't see it. Right? Like that's where I. I agree. Go ahead.
And that's why I brought up that I thought Willis looked really composed in the pocket, and the reads were there, and you could tell he was trying to get through his progressions, because for Howell, everything in. And we talked about this when we wrote up the quarterbacks before the Senior Bowl. It just looks way too slow for me. You know, I think like it seems like there's always that thought in the back of his mind, like, I got to get out of here. I got to run. I got to go. Yep. And so everything that happens, like that first read, and then it's really slow to the second read. And
it's not robotic because there's like, he's too chaotic to be robotic.
Right.
But there is some of that, right, to his game where it's like, you can, he's not paint by number, but it feels a little bit like that. Like if it gets off of, if it gets off of what he thought it was going to be, we got a problem. You can tell, like, if he got something that he's not expecting, you know when he got something that he's not expecting. With Willis, you don't know that. It's the same all the time. When he, you know, his body language, his feet are the same, his calm is the same, he finds quiet the same, whereas Howell can do that. And I thought he did a better job than I thought he was going into the week. But, like, I think he gets more, he gets rattled faster. You can see it. You know what I mean? I would still panic with him about, is he just going to freak out, pull the ball down, and want to run into a linebacker and then get concussed and we're going to lose him for the season in week one? Because that's what I feel like is going to happen with Sam Howell. That's what when I watch him on tape at Carolina and I see him leave the pocket and run, I'm like, his NFL quarterback coach should be like, you're not allowed to run vertically. You're not allowed to run north and south ever again. Like, that would be my rule with Sam Howell. Like, you have got to learn how to stay in the damn pocket and not get your head knocked off, because we cannot do this. Same with Corral. I would say, like, he's a great scrambler. Okay. But like, I don't need you out there getting like destroyed. You need to be, your scrambling needs to be so you can throw it. Not, you know what I mean? Like, there's a difference. And I think Willis understands that. And I'm not sure that Howell and maybe Corral, I guess, because we didn't see him there and I'm not giving him credit, but Howell, I'm not sure if he has that.
We won't talk about every single player on these rosters because we don't have 5 hours. But just to wrap up the quarterbacks, because there's only two we haven't really mentioned, Carson Strong, Bailey Zappe. I guess I was disappointed by Zappe's week.
Agree.
I thought he was going to be better there, and I don't think he was bad. It's just you could maybe it was because every rep he was taking right after Malik Willis, and Willis is throwing 100 mile an hour fastballs, and then Zappe's breaking off the knuckleballs or whatever. But you know, I think some of the stuff that showed up for Zappe, the positives on his tape, he made some good anticipation throws. He's pretty accurate, but, you know, he looked like, and I guess we've talked about him as a mid-round guy, but he looked like a mid-round guy to me.
He did.
Carson Strong, I don't know. Yeah. The worry with him is that he's going to be a statue in the pocket, and that's what he still looks like to me. So I don't know that there are any surprises there, but I guess just your take on those two guys.
Zappe, I agree. I think I probably expected more in terms of like what I just said. Like, you know, I think he would have been great. I thought he was going to be great at everything they put on a quarterback in this environment. And his accuracy was something that I just didn't think he had a great day and a half. I think he got better, you know, but like the first day I was underwhelmed. I thought he would be, of all the guys that were going to be in trouble with the chaos, I thought he would be the guy that wouldn't have the trouble with it. And he had more of it than I thought he would. So that was a little disappointing. But I still think, like you said, I still like him. And his tape is great. And you can't take that away and all that sort of thing. It's 1 week, whatever. And the weather sucked and all that sort of thing. And Strong, he can't move, you know. Not the way you're going to need to. And that's what we were worried about with Ritter, because at the beginning of the week, he looked so overwhelmed and freaked out. And it was like, oh God, is he going to be able to, is he just a guy who ran like six plays and that's it at Cincinnati and that's all he's going to be able to do? Well, as the week went on, we learned no. I mean, like, he can do some things. He settled down. Strong, you know, I'm like, that's my concern for him, is like, did he just get by with a couple things that they had with him there? And I think that might be what we saw. I don't know. I don't know if there's more to him there.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them. You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Running back, we'll just sort of go down the list of positions here. And Trent, well, like I said, we won't talk
about
every single player, but running back, you mentioned Damian Pierce, who I thought was really, really good. And that's, you know, we've seen the Rams draft history when Holmes was there certainly points toward a running back. DeAndre Swift was banged up again this year. Jamal Williams is probably not here for much. Maybe, I mean, one more year, but I don't know that he'd be here that. So I think running back is certainly on the table again. And there were some guys down there. Pierce, I thought, was, as you mentioned, was good. I thought Brian Robinson from Alabama looked like he could be a downhill
really good
guy
player
for
yeah.
them.
You know, didn't get to see James there, Cook and Haskins. Yeah, those were the guys that we didn't get to see. But yeah, Pierce was the most complete, right? That's, you know, in terms of he was picking up stuff in terms of protection, caught the ball well, got open, and looks like the type of guy that without a lot of tread on the tire, that could be kind of the between the tackle type if you need him to be. And I think that's kind of what I would think that maybe they would be in the range for or in the market for if they were to be after a running back. But yeah, I guess we'll have to see.
I mean, it was really the protection stuff, and you know,
he was really good
all over that, watching that very closely. And he was, I think, he was the best back probably by a decent margin, maybe other than Connor Hayward in picking up blitzes. And you mentioned Hayward too, which Dan Campbell talked about him. we know how he. I mean, I think we knew how he was going to feel about Connor Hayward before the week started, but Hayward probably checked a lot of boxes for folks, and he looks like. I mean, I think he's a day three pick and a guy that's probably in the league for like a decade and just does his job.
Yes. Great week for him. It was really cool to see him have such a good week and everyone get to see that and him sort of answer those questions that you had, right? Where can you line up in the backfield as a fullback and lead block? Because we know, I think, all the other things. We know that he can, you know, be a move H-back or he can be the second tight end. We know even that if you wanted to motion him out against a linebacker and see if he wants to run a route in space, he can do all those things. And he was able to show that in the one-on-ones and, you know, and in team drills and in 7-on-7. I mean, he gave linebackers trouble because they just can't. I mean, his feet, I mean, it's just like his dad. I mean, we've talked about this so many times. The iron, you know, Campbell called him baby Ironhead there, you know, right? It's Craig Hayward, for those of us, and I know you remember him, Chris, for those of us who remember him, like, watching him play, he was the ultimate, like, dancing bear. You know, he was the guy that was just, what was he, like 260? And his feet were incredible. I mean, he could just pick him up and put him down like you wouldn't believe for a guy at that weight. And, you know, Hayward weighed in around 240. I got to tell you, I mean, it's not too different. I mean, he doesn't have that straight line speed, but he is getting really good separation underneath to where if you need 6 yards, he can get you that, you know, and maybe 7 or 8. And he also can make catches in traffic. He's been able to make catches, you know, on throws that were behind him. He's got really good hands. I just think it was right place, right time for him as the game has been evolved. He opened his mind up a little bit, and a great week for him. And I don't know, I don't know if the Lions see him as just an extension of Kabinda or if they see him as like the next level of Kabinda. Right. And that might be it. That might be what they do. I don't know. I would not rule out Connor Hayward as a Detroit Lion before it's all said and done. He had a really good week.
I mean, I think he can be more of a weapon than Kabinda.
Absolutely. That's what I'm saying. I think he can go to another level. But can he block with a similar
consistency? That
that's the question that I don't think we've answered yet. But, you know, maybe. And I think that that's what this week proved, that it's possible. And I think that that's what I would say.
And if you're talking about, and I think that that sort of folds into the running back equation too. If the Lions are thinking day three, well, let's get a guy who can help us in a bunch of ways. Mm-hmm. I mean,
Juszczyk is the, Connor Hayward's build is not just exactly like Juszczyk. Juszczyk's taller. But I mean, my God, and he's a more experienced blocker, but like, that's kind of what you're, he is so important to everything they do, right? Like,
well, I think it was the Atlanta game. Kabinda got hurt, and after Campbell said, well, we had to throw out 50% of our playbook for the day.
Yeah.
There's your fallback plan.
Big deal. So, big deal. So we'll see.
I agree. Good week for him. Wide receiver, you mentioned Christian Watson.
Yep.
I don't know what else he could have done. Just ridiculous. 6'4". Yep. He's thick at 6'4". He was one of the fastest guys down there. I mean, he's
bendy too. Yeah.
He had to just be flying up boards at the end of that week.
Yeah.
And certainly when you talk about what the Lions need, you mentioned it, like he would play the X for them.
Yes.
And so I don't know. I don't know that we have an idea for what his range would be. I don't have a lot of exposure to him prior to this week. So
we didn't we didn't know who he was until we were like, who the hell is this? And then we had to figure it out for a second there.
But he can fly. I mean, I think he's going to test well. He returned kicks for them at North Dakota State. So, that one.
I mean, he could be a first round pick, and he could be someone that if you're Detroit, you know, he could maybe even, because we talk about the X's at the top there. Like if he slides into the first or makes more competition up there for some of those other guys, like Tolbert or Burks or one of these guys, and slides him down, maybe that works. Or maybe you end up with him. I don't know. But like, we did see, you know, him being able to work off press and get underneath guys and bend under. I mean, like, yeah, he's a freaky, freaky player. Obviously played at a lower level, but like, I would assume he'll test really well at the combine, and then he might be a first round pick when it's over with. I think this was a very, very good week. Was he the MVP or one of the receiver of the week or whatever it was? Something like that?
I think he was. Yeah.
Really good player.
And then Tolbert was a guy we talked about before. We both were interested to see him. I thought he had a good week. He got deep a few times, which was nice to see. Randall L. talked about the thing he was trying to work with him. He's a 6'1", 195 guy, and Randall L. said he likes to – his stance is really high. He likes to play high. And so when NFL cornerbacks or the good cornerbacks at the Senior Bowl can get their hands on him, it's the same thing as like when off their defensive linemen play high. You just can't go anywhere. You get knocked around and you're not winning the leverage battle. So that's something, I guess, to sort of watch moving forward. But otherwise, I thought he played well. You mentioned Velus Jones Jr. from Tennessee had a good week. I thought Bo Melton was really good too. Khalil Shakur from Boise State. Anyone else jump out for you or anything else on... I know you like Tolbert going in.
Yeah, I mean, Jones was really, really fast, live, you know, like I think that was something I wanted to see how his speed held up. And like he's a guy too that in the same way that St. Brown is a hybrid, you know, type. I think that Velus Jones and the kid from Memphis, although he's a little smaller, but Jones is one that's super interesting to me. Anybody in that sort of build, I think that, you know, can cause you problems and you don't know where he's lining up because he can do a couple different things. But for the most part, no, I think that we kind of knew what we had going in there, knew what we were going to see going in there. And like, it was good to see Tolbert look like we thought he would look. That was good to see. And he had no issues tracking the ball deep and everything else. I think he was where you want to be. So some good players up there to choose from if they want to be in that conversation for sure.
The guy from Memphis, Calvin Austin, is not a little smaller.
He's a lot smaller.
He was 5'7", 173. Yeah, he looked 5'7", 173. I mean, he had a good week. He got open a bunch.
Yeah,
fast. Really fast. Good routes. I'm kind of curious. That was one I was trying to make a fit in my head. Mm-hmm. Because I think
it's a hard one, though. Yeah.
It is a hard one.
VLS I can do. Boston, I don't know.
I guess it goes back to, like, you were saying, maybe St. Brown is playing a Z role and you would need a slot guy. Like, if Khalif Raymond's leaving, maybe.
Yeah.
I mean,
maybe.
You bring in a guy like that and he's just a more explosive option from the slot for you. I think there's room for that. But I don't know. I mean, that's a harder one to sort of wrap your head around because of what St. Brown is.
Yeah, not impossible. I wouldn't rule it out in any of that. And that's the thing is we just still don't quite know where they're going there, what they see an X as, right? Like, what do you want an X to be and all that? So that's still sort of TBD. And a lot of that will depend on the offensive coordinator hire, I would assume, too, and those sort of things as well.
Tight end was interesting. You mentioned the Lions probably need a tight end two upgrade, or at least a better blocking tight end two, which I don't know that guy was.
I don't know if Likely is guy, but I mean, God.
Isaiah Likely from Coastal Carolina was good. Yeah.
There are some others that are probably better blockers. The kid from Wisconsin is a really impressive, I can't remember his name now off the top of my head.
Dick Ferguson.
Ferguson. I know everyone talks about Ruckert and everything else.
I think Ruckert was the tight end of the week, despite having about
in a rough day the first day.
Start,
but Ferguson's really tough too. You know, a nice player who can do a lot of things for you. But Likely is a freaky dude, man. Like he can do some things that nobody else can do. You know, and when you talk about that sort of stuff, you know, maybe you're falling into the one clip we had was him dropping a pass. So.
But he was open.
He smoked the guy to get open. So, you know, like that's part of his deal. But, man, he is really interesting, yo.
Yeah, I mean, there's some interesting pieces down there. If you want another pass-catching tight end, certainly.
Yeah.
You know, Grant Calcaterra from SMU had a good week. Trey McBride, I thought, looked really interesting from Colorado State. He's a smaller guy, but he has
tough
to be
player.
More of a chess piece for you. But, some talent there. Offensive line, we touched on Hayward from Michigan State. Andrew Stuber from Michigan's a guy you mentioned. Mm-hmm. The clip you sent me to like save on my desktop of him burying
Haskell Garrett from Ohio State.
Haskell Garrett. But he had a good week. I mean, Andrew Stuber had a good week.
Yeah, I mean, they repped him at center and guard, which I thought was interesting. I mean, I expected him to get reps at guard. He's played guard before in college. And then, you know, he is a really smart player. He's got really good football IQ. He's played a ton of football at a school that has had good offensive line coaches, and he's been well taught and all these things. You know, a guy I think can be a little bit of a journeyman, plug and play, sixth offensive lineman who can do a lot of stuff for you in a pinch. Maybe like a poor man's Mason Cole to a degree if you want to take the similar or the familiar route with the Michigan thing. I wrote Jonah Jackson almost as a little bit of a comparison. He's bigger, taller, I think, than Jonah, and probably not as quick maybe with the feet. But in terms of like a guy that's like really smart, that's never going to get bullied. I mean, you saw the Haskell Garrett clip. I mean, Stuber was, the minute we got out there on Tuesday, he was the most physical guy lineman the Jets had from when they just put their helmets on. I mean, like the minute the thing started, and that never stopped. So I was impressed by him and Mays from Tennessee. I thought those guys inside, you know, for the Lions, you know, there were others. The Boston College kid is really good.
I think he's a first rounder.
You're not
I don't
getting
think
him.
They're going to get him.
And like those are guys that I'm thinking they're not getting him. Parham, you know, you're not taking him. But like, you know, guys that you would look at maybe later in the draft, that could do a couple things for you. I could see something like that.
I did think Dylan Parham from Memphis, you just mentioned him, was really good.
They
gave him some reps at center. He's very good. Played other positions. So he was like a 260 kid. Now he's 313, but he can still move a bit. And so he's interesting. I do think that they still need something inside. They got to look at a bunch of players who could be guard,
Cole Strange
lineman,
was the other one I wrote down.
Ed Ingram from LSU was down there.
Ingram
Georgia
was
had
good.
A couple guys. So, yeah, I mean, there are a lot of options for them if they want to take an interior lineman. But as I mentioned, the interior linemen, I thought, were okay. The tackles had some problems because the defensive line on both sides were so good.
Awesome.
And, you know, as we get into the defense here, Perrion Winfrey from Oklahoma was the MVP. I brought him up because he was
Yep.
I mean, he killed people all week. He had an 86-inch wingspan. You know, he played over the guards for most of the week, and it was just they couldn't
do anything with him. And he beat him with a couple. He beat him in multiple. You know, he did the. You know, I saw him do a swim, like an amazing, really smooth. You know, just completely destroyed a guy in a swim, and then the very next rep just got right under his chin and just like knocked his ass over. So he's, you know, he can do everything. I think that's what he showed off. He's got more ways than one to beat you inside, over a guard, over a center. And you said the wingspan. I mean, like, I feel like how many spots could a guy like that even play up front? I don't know. I mean, I feel like
all of them.
Yeah. I feel like he's got a little bit of that Anzarike thing the Lions liked, where they thought like, yeah, maybe he can play all of them if we wanted to, but there were a lot of guys who had good weeks. You've also got, I'm going to mess his name up, the UCLA kid, 91.
I think
91.
It's Otito Ogbonaya, yeah. But I could be wrong.
Who we saw on the first day, I think he just like completely, he wasn't on our roster because we couldn't find a roster when we first got out there. We had to figure out what his last name was, but like he completely could not do anything with him in terms of power. Yeah, he's 6'3", 326. What'd you like about him as the week went on?
Well, I feel bad because I mentioned it, like the competition level thing's always one to watch, and so one of the play you're mentioning, they're back to back from Winfrey, I think was on the NFL Network broadcast, but yeah. I went back and watched it again because it was Winfrey smoked him to the inside, and then it was a guard from Fordham was talking to the coaches, and Winfrey was just screaming at him to get back to the line and do it again, and then planted him on his backside. And so the clip from Ogbonaya, again, I'm sorry, I apologize for screwing up that pronunciation, but is against the same kid, and he killed him.
Right.
I didn't mean to pick on that guy, but yeah, he was really good, and I did want to ask, at defensive tackle, defensive line, because you mentioned Onzarike is, you know, someone I think that they see as a 0-5 tech type guy.
I think so.
They've got McNeil, who is probably their long-term, you know, nose tackle, maybe versatile guy up front there. But, I mentioned Travis Jones from UConn had a great week as a nose tackle. We've got a couple of these versatile defensive tackle guys. What do they need up there? I mean, what do they even considering, do you think, as we get towards the draft?
Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question. I don't know what they want to invest. I don't know, like, how deep they want to get into any of that. Like, I don't know. You know, that's something I thought about all week. It's just, like, I don't know what they just got done with the draft where they invested heavily. I mean, obviously, edge. I mean, we know. I mean, you've got, I don't know if you wrote down Jermaine Johnson or not. I don't think you did, but like everyone's talking about him, of course.
I said they won't get him.
Right, they're not going to get him. But I mean, obviously, like he's the guy that we talked about if you're not going to get Hutchinson. I mean, obviously, you got D'Angelo Malone on here, Ebikiete, I'm going to mess up his name, from Penn State, who was really twitchy and come off the edge. The kid from Minnesota. I mean, there's guys here on the edge that you like. Kingsley from South Carolina.
Yeah.
But like the inside guys, that's my question. Like, I don't know. You just took two. You know, are you more interested in maybe waiting and seeing what you can get later? I could see them maybe getting a guy late there and trying to develop, but that's a good question. I don't know. You know, I don't know how much they want to overinvest or whatever in a certain spot there. I'm not, you know, that's a good thing to watch as we go forward here.
Yeah, I don't really know either because as I wrote, you know, Nick Williams started 17 games. I don't think he's going to be back. So that's a 17-game starting spot you need to fill. Michael Brockers probably will be here, but I don't know that it's going to be for more than a year. I mean, they'd probably move him at the trade deadline if they could. Mm-hmm. So that's some playing time you got to fill. And I don't know. Like, Onzarike, I think that they want to see what he looks like in May and August. I don't think they're giving him a starting spot just for showing up. So maybe you do need one more guy or two more guys.
You might
play up front.
You know, you might. And I think the good news is they saw a ton of them. They saw a ton of them at the Senior Bowl, because if you do, you're going to be able to find one, because there was just a crap load of them. The edge guys, as we mentioned there, what are we thinking? The Western Kentucky kid was one. D'Angelo Malone was one I kept going back to a lot all week. He's 6'3". He's really long and he's skinny still. But he is really fast, and he is a really good athlete. I don't know. What did you see with him? I think they worked a lot with him. I know he was around Shepard, Calvin Shepard, a lot. They seem to pay attention to him quite a bit.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I just don't. The clip I put in our story is him with a hand in the dirt, and he comes across and just destroys Greg Dulcich, the UCLA tight end. But I don't think you can play him.
Not yet.
Yeah. Like, ever, hand in the dirt or against the run early on.
Right.
But he does move really well in space, and he's a really interesting and quick pass rusher. So that sort of gets to the heart of, you know, what they might be looking for, like KD from Penn State, and I mentioned the Minnesota kid, Mafe, you know, there are just a bunch of guys there that, I don't know how much you'd be using them early, but I think you could, if you put them on that, like, Julian Okwara plan and do some of those things with him, like the South Carolina guy you mentioned,
Kingsley,
to me, the power looked a little more there from him than some of these other guys. So maybe you see him as an edge setting option.
Right.
But I think there's a lot of those kind of hybrid guys that they need to get pass rushers. Like, the Penn State kid is just, even if you're just drafting him to be a pass rusher, I think he might be one of the better pure
pass
rushing options in this draft. And so
that's literally all he does. I think he just
that's
bends.
Fine.
Yeah. And right. Yeah. Yeah. And that's what he's good at. You know, and I think that that's the case to be made. I think that they don't have that. I think that's the thing. I would be more concerned with that than I would be anything inside. I think that if you're going to spend or you're going to invest draft capital on a guy that can only do one thing, get a guy that can just bend and do that, right? Like you're saying, or a guy like Malone, who you can develop into that or whatever else. But yeah, there's certainly no shortage of that. That's where I would lean on. Though in that area, stacked linebackers, you mentioned Chad Mumma. We talked about some others as the week went on. Sterling Weatherford from Miami was solid. You got Brian Asamoah in here mentioned as well. And then Damone Clark from LSU. Mumma is solid, is a really solid kind of all around, you know, do everything linebacker. Do you think he was fast enough to cover? He's interesting. I don't know. What was your end of the day takeaway on some of those cover linebackers and the guys that kept running a little bit?
I do think he's fast enough to cover. There was the play in the game where he chased down Malik Willis, scrambled and erased an angle on it. So I do think he's got the speed to cover. I mean, I think beyond the testing, and I do think he'll test pretty well, but beyond the testing, we talk about St. Brown and just like having an understanding of what you're seeing when you get to the next level. Like, that's kind of the feeling I got from him and from Clark. Like, they both look like they can watch tape and understand it. And Clark just kept
filling gaps
that other guys weren't filling throughout every practice.
Yep.
And the clip I have of him is just, it's a read option with Sam Howell, and they have a tight end, I think, slicing through the backfield, and he reads the whole thing and he gets inside the blocks. Like, he did that over and over again throughout the week. And so, like, those are guys to me that, if you're sort of looking at this as, like, you like Reeves Maben, he's going to be a rotational guy for you. Mm-hmm. Barnes, you'd like to maybe free up and get into space and just give him some chances to go downhill and run at guys and hit. You still need, that whatever you thought Anzalone was going to be. Like, you need that middle linebacker who's going to run things for you. And to me, either of those guys, I think, would fit. I thought Aaron Hansford, too, went back and watched from A&M.
Yeah.
Had a good week. So I think there were some of those guys there. I don't know. What'd you think of Clark?
I'm glad you put that one in, because, like, that's what I thought about the second day a lot. I my eyes just kept going back to him as, like, I'm like, this guy, he knows what he's doing, right? Like, he knows there are certain guys, and that's what the Lions need right now as a stack. They need a stack, and that's what you're explaining in Anzalone. A stack linebacker that you can look out there and you're like, you know, he knows what he's doing. He's not lost. He's not freaking out. He's not overwhelmed. He's not in Mars right now. You know what I mean? If you're going to run, you know, power counter, split zone, inside zone, he's going to fit them all. He knows what he's doing. He knows what tells are. He watches tape. He can pick things up quick. He's not going to get bullied. He's not going to get knocked off. He's not going to do stupid stuff. He's not going to do anything crazy. He's probably not going to do anything that you're like, holy shit. You know, he's not going to do anything that's going to, like, wow you or knock you over. But you're never going to look out there and be like, where is Clark right now? What the hell is he doing? Where is he at? Right? Like, and Mumma was the same way, I think, all week. Like, when I watched him, it was like, because I kept I was glad you brought the Willis scramble, because I'd forgotten about that. You mentioned the story. And there was a couple times watching him during, you know, one-on-ones where I'm like, man, I don't know, is he fast enough? And then I would see, like, yeah, whatever, he's fine. Because, like, the way he would play somebody, right, to get to buy himself an extra half second. You could see it was similar to what we'd see with Connor Hayward, where it was like he's getting himself open because A, he has foot speed, and B, he knows how to run a route. Like, I think the guys that the highlighted here are guys that know how to play football, and I think they need a stacked linebacker right now because Derek Barnes is still learning how to play football on that side. They need a stacked linebacker who, if nothing else, just really knows how to play. And you got Coach Spielman out there, so I don't think you're gonna have a hard time IDing something like that. But I'm glad you mentioned those two guys because for me, they both absolutely fill those two categories.
Just in the secondary here, real quick as we wrap up, cornerbacks, it's tough on these defenders in these one-on-one drills a lot of times. Yeah. The cornerbacks, you know, I didn't think the cornerbacks necessarily had a great week, and it wasn't like the greatest receiving group of all time either. So I don't know.
Right.
Like, I didn't come out of that week thinking a bunch of cornerbacks helped themselves, but Kobe Bryant and Tariq Woolen were the two I mentioned because I think Bryant, I thought, was really good. The game wasn't quite as good, but the practices were really good from him. He just looked really patient, seemed like he understood the routes really well. He doesn't mind playing physical. Woolen is just, I mean, he's a 6'3 guy who might run a 4.25 at the combine, and you see that. I mentioned in the story that the
maybe
other
they'll
thing
take
about,
him at two.
Yeah, right. The other thing about Bryant that jumped out to me, Desmond Ridder was talking about him and said, he's really the guy who showed Ahmad Gardner how to be a professional, prepare like a pro. And that is something that Gardner, we're talking about, is maybe a top 10, top 15 guy. So that matters when teams get into those meetings and they ask Ridder and they ask Gardner and all the other Cincinnati kids on that defense, who's the leader for you guys? And they all say Kobe Bryant.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to count big time too. But Woolen, I mean, geez, man.
Woolen has all the, you know, that's the guy that you walk out there, you're like, who the hell's that? And the 100 guys walk out in the field, and that's where your eyes go because he's just a mountain. But like Bryant, there's not another corner at the Senior Bowl that Aaron Glenn likes more than, I promise you that. I don't know if there's one. I mean, he is a dog all the way. Like, he checks all those boxes. From Glenville, right? I mean, he's one of those tough Cleveland kids that just knows how to play corner. And that's why Cincy was so good. And I'm glad that, you know, Ridder shined him like that because I think that was kind of how they were, you know, they were known like at Cincy. Like, Gardner's such a physical talent and he's such a good player and he's got all that swagger too. But Kobe Bryant was their understated, like, very consistent, very good, very steady, very good. He won the Thorpe, I think, right? I think he did anyway. And just a really, really sound, good football player who can just make somebody look stupid because because he's so physical and he knows how to play. And we saw that in one-on-ones. I mean, you know, we saw a couple, intentional groundings out there because he was crazy. Just putting receivers in mailboxes, you know, like he's a really good football player. I don't know where he lands, in terms of like, you know, draft stock, whatever, but like, that he would fit everything I think that they would want in terms of what the Lions are looking for as a corner right now. I would think Kobe Bryant would fit all of it. Do you disagree with that? I mean, he
no,
seems like maybe
all.
The best fit of anybody you've written down here, I feel like, for the Lions. I mean, maybe anybody we either of us have written down would be possibly Kobe Bryant. He is a very good player.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, and like I said, and Woolen too, like I just
Well, because physically, my God, yeah.
Physically, right. And, like, if you're going to take a gamble on a guy that, like, maybe needs some time to figure it all out, and like, if you want the 6'3 corner who can run 22.5 miles per hour, like, that's ridiculous. So I think, you know, they can find something there. Like I said, I didn't think it was a great week for the cornerbacks overall. I do think the safeties looked pretty good, and some of those guys were bouncing back and forth. Between the drills, I mentioned
Jalen Petrie from Baylor,
who said he kind of models his game after Tyron Matthew and Buda Baker.
You want to tell your story on that one? When you
well, that's
what do you mean?
I always
you sound
have,
like an old man.
I guess I was gonna say I always have some of those moments where I feel like I'm 100 years old because he said I like Tyron Matthew, I like Buda Baker. That's who I've modeled my game after. And they played together in Arizona in 2017, I think. I think it was like the start of. Right,
something like that. Yeah, right when he got there.
And I said, oh, did you ever watch tape of them together or ever watch them when they were together? And he said, no, man. Tyrann Mathieu plays for the Chiefs.
You idiot. He's
like, yeah, man. Yeah, I got you. I know.
You're like, okay, never mind.
Yeah, forget it. So I guess that was when I clicked that he would have been like 12.
Yeah, right. 13. Yeah, that's funny.
But I did think it was interesting. He said in high school he played that chess piece role,
right.
Which
yep.
I said to him, oh, that's, you know, I don't know that I've ever heard another player tell me that. Like, we hear a lot of guys who that's are corners new, in yeah. high school. Mm-hmm. And transition and who are safeties and then they move or running backs and play that chess piece role on defense. Yeah. But to have someone specializing in that at 17.
We're starting to see that now. Yeah.
Yeah. And I thought that was interesting. That sort of jumped out to me. And then I mentioned Kirby Joseph from Illinois because I thought he had a really strong week. And I don't know that I wrote him down at all when we were out there. And then I went back and watched the tape.
Yeah,
and every time
I agree.
Someone made a play, it was him. And I thought he did a lot in coverage in one-on-ones, which are almost impossible to defend when you get those running backs and tight ends. And then he also made a couple plays when he was playing like high in the 7-on-7 drills, which, you know, if you're looking for something sort of interchangeable, his skill set fits in a different way. Pete Baylor used him as like an edge blitzer, and
yeah, he was like a cover. They used him like the Michigan used real peppers or whatever, like in a Aranda has that, like, I don't know what he probably calls it. He's probably got a name for it or whatever, the position. Yeah,
I don't
like,
know.
Like, you know, yeah, tiger or something like that or whatever. Right. Yeah,
yeah,
hawk or whatever. Yeah,
and Joseph to me looked more like kind of the classic interchangeable safety, but I think that, you know, those were two that jumped out. Anyone else in the secondary that you like? I think you like the other Baylor.
I like both the Baylor kids. Woods. I like Petrie better though, and I was glad you wrote him down because that's what I thought of. Like, you know, a guy that can play in the box, because, you know, that's the one thing that I don't. If you're gonna play somebody with Walker, you know, Walker's at his best when he's able to sort of sit back and sort of unpack the defense and help guys. You know, help in coverage and then also sort of make reads, you know, as people are coming at him. Petrie would be a guy that I would think that, like you said, you can move him more and you can play him in the box. And he just had a really good, and I was glad you brought up the Illinois kid too, because those are two guys, and there were others, but those are the two maybe that were the most consistent in terms of, like, they weren't afraid to get their hands on a tight end. Right away, like, if a running back came out of him, if they picked up a running back coming out of the backfield, it wasn't like, let me just try to run stride by stride with this guy. It was like, no, get up there, get your hands on him, like, make him feel you, and then make him adjust his route, right, as you're playing. They were physical coverage guys who I think the Lions, you know, they play that too high stuff and everything else, and I think they'll continue to do something like that no matter how it all ends up going, but, like, the safeties and all the defensive backs, really, but the safeties have got to be, they've got to be very good, you know? Like, if for this defense to take the next step, they've got to be very good and they've got to be physical. They've got to be confident in their ability to go up. Like, that's the thing that always catches Will Harris when we watch him. And it's different in the NFL. I'm not saying that these guys are going to have the answer. It's a Senior Bowl, okay? It's different than playing in the real thing. But Harris, it's always like you watch him cover somebody and it's like he's just backpedaling. A guy comes at him and he's still backpedaling when the guy's right up on him. And it's like, no, I need you to meet him and, right, like, take him off his route and kill the route right here before it even starts. Like, I saw some of that in some of those guys because I think that we're, and you brought up the point, it was a great point. We're starting to see now guys enter the league. Isaiah Simmons was one a couple years ago. We heard from at the combine that they did this with him in high school because he's such a freaky kid. We're starting to see guys in high school play those hybrid back end roles now. So when they're coming into the league, you know, they've seen Buda Baker. They know what this is. So they know what a money backer or whatever the hell the position is or whatever you want to call it now is. And they want to play it. And, like, that's cool to see that. So I saw a lot of guys there this week that looked like that to me. Petrie was probably the one that I watched the most on the Lions side though. So a little long winded there, but it was cool to see a lot of that stuff going on.
All right, I think we covered a lot of ground.
Yeah.
Any final thoughts on the week or what's next here for the Lions?
They're probably going to get some time off, but I guess Dan Campbell needs an offensive coordinator, and he's probably going to need a defensive coordinator. I think he's going to need a defensive coordinator. I'm guessing.
You think he's getting that job?
I'm guessing Aaron Glenn is. I have no idea, but I'm guessing Aaron Glenn is getting the Saints job. I'll just make my guess known right now. Are you guessing the same or no? What do you think?
I think Aaron Glenn's still here.
You think Aaron Glenn's still here?
One more.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that would be good.
I do think they needed offensive coordinator.
But obviously.
It's going to be Ben Johnson to some degree, but yeah.
Yeah. So that's what's next, and then we'll see, I guess, what they do in free agency, right? I guess we'll see if anything comes of that, one way or the other. I mean, what are your immediate thoughts here as they unpack all this?
Yeah, I mean, obviously the coordinator stuff is a big deal. It'd be helpful for them if the Saints would make a decision here, like in the next 48 hours. I mean, it certainly changes the dynamic of this offseason if Glenn leaves, and because then you got to make sure Pleasant stays, and if he does, if you lose both, things really can unravel. But yeah, the coordinator decision. Campbell said he interviewed a couple guys. He wouldn't give us names. That. We did that interview on the street corner.
It was perfect. Yeah.
Theater in Mobile as Campbell was running up to participate in the summit.
He got a Go Lions out there from somebody on the street, too. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I think Ben Johnson, I think we're of the understanding that he'll be part of it, right?
Yep. In some way, shape, or form. That
some
seems
way
fair.
Here. So. We'll see. I think the most of the rest of it depends on whether if Campbell doesn't want to call plays, that might be the part where you bring in an OC.
Yep.
You let Ben Johnson be the passing game coordinator and you go from there. If Campbell wants to keep calling plays, I think Ben Johnson's probably your OC. That's my read on that.
Yes. I think either way he's going to be involved, right? Like that seems like and it seems like this is all sort of hinging on whether or not Dan Campbell wants to call plays. Like that's what we would say right now. Yeah.
So we'll have all that covered, as we mentioned last show or the show before, sort of on a little bit of a different schedule now that we're in the off season. But we'll have at least one more show this month. We'll keep you posted on when that's coming in a couple weeks here, certainly something before the combine and then either at the combine if they let us podcast there after the combine, which is less than a month away now. And it sounds like we're going to be there. We weren't there last year. It was all virtual.
Yeah.
It's like, well, you might not be.
Back in action. I'm not going. I don't want to go. You can go.
Sounds like I will be there for at least at least a few days. So
yeah.
Back in Indy. So we'll have a couple shows for you between now and then. Like I said, we've got a month until the combine. So head over to theathletic.com. Pick up a subscription. We've always got some deals running. You can get our show ad-free on the Athletic app as well. Thanks to everyone who's subscribed so far. Make sure you rate and review the show. It helps us get a little more promotion on some of these podcast apps too. You can find us on Spotify, Google, Apple Podcasts, everywhere else. So for Nick, I'm Chris. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you soon.